All right, so what does everybody do? I don't want to be like formal. Like what?
Programming.
You're programming, more like developer. You work at Bluehost, right?
Yeah.
What are you?
Developer.
WordPress, you said.
WordPress, all day.
WordPress developer.
I guess it's a WordPress user group.
I'm a developer, but I spend 75% of my time on Magento, not on WordPress. Sorry, I know that makes me a black sheep.
I might have some questions for you.
Everybody, I have questions.
My name is Victor. I'm with Utah Open Source, and I provide the facility here and the Wi-Fi and everything. So.
Sweet.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're the hookup. I work at Instructure up in Salt Lake. I'm a UX designer at Instructure, or UI designer, or whatever people want to call us, interaction designer. So I spend most of my time designing our application and improving our application because it's not real great. Our competitor is Blackboard. I don't know if you're familiar with Blackboard, using Blackboard.
Like the college.
Yeah.
Yeah, the learning management system. We make Canvas LMS.
Used it.
Yeah. I used it once when it was in, like, when they first introduced it at UVU, like, 3 years ago. And it had this, like, pencil, and it was kind of cheesy. Now it's not quite as cheesy. But
I thought it was a step up from what I'd used before, which was Moodle.
Yeah, that's kind of like our slogan in UX is that we just suck less than all of our competitors. We're still not very good.
Blackboard's a pretty low barrier.
Yeah, and so that's what we're trying to get better, and we're actually building. I just started there in December, and we're actually building a kind of a big UX team to try to improve the overall experience of what we do. So hopefully that's better. I've got a couple side projects going on right now that haven't seen the light of day yet, but I work, kind of a freelance company, I don't know, a plethora with my friend, he's a developer, and then we're building an application called Payback that hopefully, we started last year, and hopefully we'll get it done sometime.
What is Payback about?
What's
Payback?
Oh, Payback is the idea was I did freelance for a while, and I had a lot of jobs where I didn't get paid on my freelance projects, which seems to be kind of a problem. And so we just wanted to, I wanted to build an application that was kind of fun, something that would help you sort of get paid on your projects. So we're kind of building it around the premise of we'll publicly shame the site owner if you don't get paid. So hopefully we'll have like a WordPress plugin and it'll be kind of fun. And we're not taking it too seriously, but hopefully it'll be kind of fun for developers and designers. Hopefully we'll get that built, put together. The guy I'm developing with, he just keeps changing his mind on what back end he wants. So I'm trying to just pin him down to something. So who's familiar with UX, user experience, UI?
A little bit.
What do you guys know as far as UX? Like, broad question. Like, what does a UX designer do, I guess? Because I kind of don't even know what I do half the time.
Like content strategy, interaction design, user interface design. Anything surrounding the experience the user has with your site, basically.
I like to think of myself as the user advocate at Instructure. So when I design stuff, I like to think about the user and less of kind of UX, UI. We do a lot of UI design, and so we do a little bit of both. We do... There are some traditional UX people that do like just they look at analytics and they write user stories and they write personas all the time. We do a little bit less of that with our product, And right now we are in kind of an approving phase. But it's complicated. I always thought it was complicated, and there's all kinds of debates online about, is UX worth it? Is it not worth it? There's all kinds of stuff. So what I wanted to do was just talk a little bit about, just kind of maybe introduce it a little bit and talk about the people who have influenced me, some of the people who are pretty good in the industry, and then talk a little bit more practical about what can be put on sites simply and effectively to like just be better at UX and hopefully improve the overall experience of the internet. So there's Alan Cooper. He's kind of the godfather of interaction design. He's got at Cooper.com, they have a program in San Francisco. They train people on interaction design and all kinds of stuff. I haven't been out there yet. I'm trying to get out there this summer. They have a lot of different courses that you can take. It's a little bit expensive, but I think they've got like a boot camp, like a UX, UI boot camp. That's like 4 days or something. And I think it's like $1,500 or something like that. But they do a lot of training. Jared Spool is another one. He's been around for a long time.
I've actually subscribed on his blog.
Yeah.
UIE.
Yeah, UIE.
So I read that on occasion.
Yeah, it's one of the most horrible design sites. One of them.
yeah, but for a UX.
Yeah.
A site on UX is pretty terrible.
I always thought it was really funny that most UX, UI websites are just horrible. They're just like the worst things ever. Like Cooper, I don't think they're still doing it anymore. Cooper used to have this thing where like you would click on stuff and the whole view would like change across this like panoramic thing. Yeah, it was so horrible. I'm like, come on, you're interaction designers. And then Josh Porter, he's kind of the Jared Spool school. But he's got I follow these blogs a lot. 52 Weeks of UX is really good. It's really practical stuff. And then Ricardo is a good one, too. He puts a lot of stuff on there. A lot of times it's kind of like Twitter. It's like he puts little tiny articles in there, like little things. They're really easy to digest and read. Wendy Hess, she's a good interaction designer as well. She's got a lot of good stuff to read. Rachel Hinman just came out with a book, The Mobile Frontier, a lot about mobile interaction design, where it's going, where it's headed. That's a pretty good book if you have some time to read it. And then Luke Robluski he's really good, like really good with mobile. He's the mobile first guy. He did all the mobile first stuff.
His mobile first book.
Yeah, he's got the little mobile first book, the small book.
Just the green one.
Yeah. The Book Apart stuff, yeah. He's really good. Like every Monday he's got the stats. He's got the Monday stats. And that's really awesome. I like reading those, seeing how many people are actually buying tablets and how nobody's using computers anymore. And makes you feel horrible when you're designing a web application. And you're like, nobody's using this anymore. There's some different philosophies there. They're all basically the same. I mean, there's some different philosophies on UX, but everybody has an opinion. Everybody's got their stats to prove their opinion to back up what their philosophy is. And for the most part, I think everybody's right to some degree, because UX is all about your user and not about users in general. So you have to really know your user to develop an experience for them instead of to develop this overall kind of encompassing experience for everybody. I just wanted to kind of focus on like four kind of proven things that we can put in our sites and our applications. It may not be real super specific to WordPress, but the goal. So all the philosophies that we read online about user experience, most of them come down to designing to meet the user's kind of goal in mind, whatever that goal might be, the user's goal for that application. And in ours, we have two main user goals. We have the student, that instructor of the student needs to go in and access all the assignments, turn in assignments. Their goal is to get a good grade and use the LMS as a tool to do so. And the teacher's goal is to create a really good course online for their students. Whereas like Facebook's goal is to play Farmville, you know, for most users. So they're good at that. They're good at getting people to Farmville. So whatever the goal might be of your site, I worked for a marketing place for about a year and a half, and our whole entire goal was to trick people into signing up for stuff, and we were really good at it.
Dark backwards.
So I feel like there's a lot of like principles and stuff, so I tried to break them down into kind of four and use kind of the chair thing. I wrote an article a while back about the four legs of usable designs, and I got ripped in the comments that, well, there's a bunch of three chairs. Look, here's a chair with three legs, and here's a chair with three legs, and I'm like, okay, I know, come on. It's just an illustration. So the first one is be standard and consistent. And we'll go into these a little bit deeper. But be standard and consistent. I'm not talking standards like web standards, more like element standards, layout standards. And then consistency, maintaining consistency in your application, both with what the user's familiar with and then also within your application as well. But we'll go into that a little bit more. And then keep them in control. Keep the users in control is another one. You want to make them feel like they're in control all the time while you're going through their application and website. Give feedback is a huge one. And then be efficient. And we'll talk about efficiency. We get in the debate all the time about efficiency at work. And it goes back and forth a lot. And we get a lot of teachers, for some reason, they count clicks. Every time they push their mouse, they count it. I don't know if they're like have tick marks everywhere, but every time we go talk to teachers, they're always like, it took me 9 clicks to get to my mail, and it needs to be more efficient. And we're like, but how many clicks does it take you to get to Gmail? How many clicks does it take you to get your campus mail? Like, you know, maybe it's not about the clicks, maybe it's about the ease of getting there and less about the clicks, but so we get in that debate all the time about clicks over efficient, you know, like, is that efficient to have more clicks or not, less clicks?
A lot of the studies I've seen, like form conversions and sign-up conversions, stuff like that, for each click you add, it's something like 15-20% drop-off.
Yeah.
On an average.
Yeah, but
so
that's
I
not
mean,
for getting your mail.
To,
right,
it's not like, oh, that's just, I'm not going to get my mail, that's too many clicks.
I understand, but what I'm saying is that shows that people have some sort of click fatigue or something. That the deeper into a process you make somebody go, click, 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 click.
Yeah.
They either need to have a super strong motivation to get there, doesn't mean they'll like it, or they'll just leave.
Yeah, they'll just take off. And it is funny when we talk to users, and I don't know if I have this in my slide, but we go talk to users a lot, and we were just over at UVU the other day, and we were talking to a bunch of students and teachers about our mobile application, and they tell you one thing, they tell you they don't like this, and they tell you why they don't like it, and they tell you they'll never use it, and then when you ask them their goal, that's essentially what you're providing for them is a way to get to their goal really quickly. They just don't want to use it because it's different or it's changing or it revolves around 5 clicks instead of 4. And one thing we found too with the click thing is it just depends. It depends on what you're doing. We have with the mail stuff, they were complaining that it takes too long to get to their inbox because they had to click through a lot of different things. And then in another section on the people page where they would find their students, they're actually clicking more, but they all said they loved it. So like, we're kind of puzzled as to why, like, something's wrong and they're paying attention to the clicks more when they go to the mail, and something in the experience is wrong, which we know is our mail, our inbox is really terribly designed. But yeah, it's kind of this. So there's an efficiency debate, and we have it pretty much at least weekly, I think, at work. So we'll talk about standard and consistent. Standard elements, it kind of just goes along with being familiar. If you're a blog, there are certain standard elements in your blog that are just in every blog, right? There's usually a search, there's usually, what else is in a blog? Yeah, there's tags and categories and there's traditional things that are in almost every blog. Where they put them, where they put them in their layout may change a little bit.
There's social sharing links.
Yeah, social sharing links, related articles at the bottom.
Tons of ads.
Yeah, tons of ads. All the little 125, like on Smashing Magazine, when you click it and you just have to wait until everything loads. Those are all just standard traditional like elements or things of a blog. And so if you're designing a blog page, you kind of want those. Like if you're designing a blog site, you kind of want those for your user. If you're designing a new blog and you have an audience, you don't really know who they're going to be. Maybe you're doing a web design blog. Those standard elements can be comfort to new users as well as like old users as well. You know, users that just use blogs a lot. When they hit your site, it's just easier for them to navigate where they're going. It does kind of homogenate a certain aspect of blogs. All blogs kind of look the same. They feel the same. And so there's a lot of different ways to use visual design and hierarchies and different things like that to shake that up a little bit. But you want to try not to deviate too much out of the standard.
I'm guessing you still wouldn't like recommend having a tags feature if you don't actually have decent tags for your posts.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, there's going to be elements that you're not going to have. Maybe your blog's different. You're not going to have certain things. But like I think one of the best cases is like the logo and like the login setting screen on an application. Sometimes people will take that login, that little login button or link or whatever, little pop down thing, and they'll move it somewhere on their site, and then users just freak out because they don't know where it's at. Users expect a login thing. Like, I mean, on every site, it's always in the upper right hand corner. And so somewhere in that area, if you're building a new application, you know who your users are, that's probably a good place to put your login. Like somewhere up in that region. And so that's what I kind of mean by like using the standard elements of something. A web application is going to be different than a blog. A newspaper, kind of like a news site, is going to be a little bit different. It's going to have different elements. It's going to have different stuff than like a brochure site for like a photographer. There are certain goals that need to be met by the user. Like the user is going to go to a photography site to see photography, see a portfolio, and hopefully hire that photographer for their wedding or whatever. And so you don't really want those. Say you have a blog on your photography site. On your homepage, you're probably generally not going to put like a big tag section from your blog on your homepage of your photography site, because that's not really the goal of the user when they're coming to the homepage. Standard elements. Standard elements with what's in your product, like what's in your realm. If you're a marketing site and you're making landing pages, you know, there's a certain kind of framework for landing pages, kind of a standard design. Consistent placement and layout. This goes for both, I think, comparatively to other websites and your own website. And we'll talk about consistency a little bit in behavior, too. That kind of changes things. But consistent placement and layout. One good example of this is in our application and InStructure. We have like these index pages of like assignments and quizzes and discussions. And like they're all basically the same thing. Like the student's going to go to he's going to go to his assignment and he's going to view his assignment. He's going to go to his quiz and he's going to take the quiz. He's going to go to the discussion and be inside the discussion. And the index page for all those is the same element. It's just a block that he clicks on that he goes into the details. And every single one of those pages is designed completely different, because every developer just did it their own way. Like the guy who was assigned to build the assignments page built it the way that he thought it was great, and then the next guy built it the way they thought it was great. And so now there's just this inconsistency that just clashes, and nobody knows where anything is. There's no standardization, and everything's inconsistent. And if the behaviors were different, then the inconsistency would be acceptable, but the behaviors of all those are all exactly the same. So it's like, it just doesn't make any sense. And that's one of our big pushes now. And you've probably been to blogs or WordPress sites or other websites where there's just like no cohesion between like the pages. Like you might go to an about page and it's different than the blog post page, like completely different than the blog post page. You know, maybe they move the sidebar around, or they add a third sidebar, or they're a second sidebar, or, you know, or maybe it's one element that changes place. Like, I've seen some where, like, the search bar is at the top on the home page, and then there's, like, a big 300 by 250 ad. And then you go to the next page, and then the search bar is now underneath the 300 by 250 ad. And you're like, as a user, you're like, now I got to find that search bar again. Then you go to the next one, and now the search bar is somewhere else. And so there's a lot of that stuff going on. I don't know how that happens, really. Probably just we're not thinking about the overall product design. But and then, yeah, behavior should be consistent. So when I first started designing, I would make sure that everything was really consistent. I'd make sure that everything was super consistent with each other. And I didn't understand that the behaviors of certain things changed the way that they needed to be designed. I'm trying to think of a good example of this. But if you have different behaviors, I'm trying to think of a really good example. I can't. I had one last night, and I totally forgot. But yeah, like the index pages I was talking about earlier on at the instructor stuff. If those behaviors are different, like if the discussion, if you could reply to a discussion message in the discussion index page, then that changes the behavior, which changes the look. It might need to do something different. So instead of going in and clicking on the discussion and opening up like the discussion the same way you would an assignment, that behavior becomes different. So that discussion and that assignment are two different. They do two different things. And so they warrant a different design. The key, the consistency in the behaviors, is that if I have a discussion and I have an announcement somewhere else in the application that does a similar behavior, then I want to keep my announcement to be the similar behavior as well as the discussion, so that the behaviors don't change. Like the user's going to grow, they're going to expect certain things, especially the first time they hit a site. They'll expect to jump into a discussion, like on the instructor as an example. They'll jump into a discussion and see that box, and then they go over announcements, and then it's that box is above it where they're gonna reply, and then it just changes. It just throws them off, and then they're confused and they don't know what's going on. So behaviors, you want to lump behaviors together. If that means visually changing the behaviors so they're different, the different behaviors are different, that's better for the user, as long as the behaviors stay the same and they stay consistent throughout the application site. But then also, don't always just do what everybody else does, right? Like, somebody might. Jared Spool's got an article on the print, where the print is located in like a Word application, or a Pages application, or something. It's in file, right? File print, and he goes on this argument about how that doesn't make sense to the application. The print would be there. It needs to be somewhere else. But everybody puts it there because some guy made a decision to put it there, a developer or somebody, in like Word a long time ago or something. They put it there, and then everybody else just copied it because it was either the popular application or somebody just assumed that there was some user study behind it and that made sense. But nobody really questioned it. So now most of our applications have like print over in file, and maybe that's not the best place to put it. But now, if somebody was to design like a word processing software program and they moved print, everybody would go bananas, right? Like nobody would know where it's at, everybody would be pissed off, and the application would be horrible. So you want to be kind of careful with certain things like that when you're making a decision, that you don't necessarily do what everybody else does, but at the same time, you kind of sort of have to do what everybody else does depending on what you're doing. So there's a battle, and we debate that at Instructure a lot because most of the teachers and most of the students are used to using Blackboard or another application, one of our competitors, and they do something that's wrong. We want to fix it, but if we try to fix it, then all of our users go crazy. So it's a slow process, and it's a slow thing to move people around and to put them in different places and to train them on where new things will happen.
Convey your gifts. Where should I put it?
Right.
So yeah, when you're looking at standards and you're looking at consistency, you know, just because Facebook, if you're building a social network, just because Facebook does it a particular way, doesn't necessarily mean that your application needs to do it as well. It might mean that version one it does until you get your users going, and then you change it, and that's fine. That's also another part about developing or building a website or looking at analytics or anything like that, is seeing what your users are actually doing and then modifying to where they're going, their goals, what they're doing. So let's keep them in control. One big thing is you want one primary action on every view. I think this is probably a little bit more prevalent to building an application versus maybe a website. But a website should have the same kind of principle. You should still have one primary action or one primary goal on any page. The about us page should be the about us page. It should be a page about us. That's all it should be. And if there's an action taken on there, it's probably going to be contact us. But then you have contact us at the bottom, and then you've got, you know, follow my brother's blog and follow so-and-so's blog. And you have all these other secondary actions that you want them to take. But you want visually them to focus on the primary action. This is one, too, where, I don't know, who uses Bootstrap? Yeah. This is where Bootstrap kind of comes in handy, because you can just say primary. Hold my primary button. And then also on this one primary action, you want to keep your primary action primary, but you also want to keep all of your secondary actions secondary too. So if you have a primary action and your button's blue and your form, like on your marketing site, is nice and bright and blue, you know, and it grabs the user's attention, if they scroll down a little bit more and you've got a secondary action that's bright and blue and everything, and it looks kind of like a primary action, but it's not quite a primary action. Yeah, don't do that.
It's a primary, secondary.
Yeah, it's a secondary primary action. But you know, I mean, visually, the user, it's just going to confuse the user if there's too many options. And so to just find out what they want to do exactly with that page, or where you want them to go with that page, just have them do that.
Well, and if you're bringing WordPress into this, if you're building for the WordPress dashboard, there's a primary button, which is the blue button, and there's a secondary button, which is
the grayed out one, yeah.
And usually, I mean, if it's core WordPress, then it's only going to have one blue button on the page. And if it's a well-designed whatever that's using core WordPress, it's only going to have. And if it's badly designed plugin or theme, then it might have multiple blue buttons.
Yeah. And we've all I think I've got a couple plugins that I've installed before that are like that. It's like you click through them and there's like every button is just bright blue and you don't know. You're like, I don't know which one's critical of me to set this thing up. Like, I have no idea. So I'm just going to do them all. And hopefully it won't break. We all the time get in this debate, too, whether, like, that primary, secondary action, where it's at, is it over on the top right, the bottom right, is the primary button on the right and the secondary button on the left, or vice versa. It doesn't really matter. As long as people know that one of them's primary and the other one's secondary.
I've written up an article once about how that works in desktop applications, because it's different between Windows, Mac, and even like in Ubuntu Linux.
Yeah.
They switch around the default button over on the left and right, depending on OK or cancel. And one of them's always the primary, like one of them's always activated. If it's a destructive action, it's always cancel. And if it's something they want to happen, it's always okay or whatever, but they'll switch the order of them between the OSs, and so people are kind of mixed on it.
And that's like, when I was at Active Networks, and we had guys that were kind of Mac people, and we had guys that were PC people, and that we always placed them in the wrong places. When I was a UI developer, like, I just naturally put them over on the right, and a couple of other guys put them on the left, and then what we had is this inconsistency of the placement, right? So then all of us were putting them in different places. Yeah, the primary button was there, and everybody was finding the primary button, but we ran into a problem now where the inconsistency took over, and then users were mad at us for that. So
it makes me wonder. Could just mash one spot and get through it some form?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, actually, if some people have tried, and I probably wouldn't even recommend this myself. You probably wouldn't either, but I wonder if some people have, like, done user agent testing, you know, if they're on Mac, places because they're used to this in their applications.
Oh, flip it over and see.
Yeah.
We should try that.
I don't know whether that would be a good model to do or not. They would jump over to another guest computer somewhere else and, you know, in some library or university lab, and it would be switched around.
responsive UI design.
Everything switches around all the time depending on what thing you're on. And then so this one I like because I think mobile really influences this. And I think this is something that web applications should do more, and I don't think they do, is make stuff kind of discoverable and fun. Like, instead of just making things be there all the time, sometimes it's fun to hover around the thing and discover what's there. And a lot of mobile applications, when you play around with mobile apps, you slide a list item over, and there's something there. It's like a delete. I can delete this list item, or I can do something here. A lot of applications they don't tell you that you can swipe left and right all the time, but you kind of discover that as you go. And that makes them, I think, to me, that makes mobile applications more fun to use. And I think we kind of don't do that in web applications as much. It's like, we just put this navigation here, and everybody can see it all the time, and it's just there. You know, we just make it too simple, whereas sometimes it's kind of nice to just, maybe the user's hovering around, they're doing their task, but they're hovering around a little bit from list item to list item or doing something, and they see another little icon pop up, and they're like, oh, hey, I can edit that from right there instead of clicking up here and going, through this navigational item. And so there's a lot of that stuff. I would recommend that that's kind of a secondary thing. Usually in mobile, you'll notice that if they're doing some, semi-discoverable power user type of, swiping thing or some crazy gesture, they've always got another way to get to that same thing. But they're kind of fun. I actually discovered one earlier today in our application that I was trying to redesign some screens in our application, and I was like, oh, it'd be cool if I could do a little swipe here, but I don't think our users are ready for that. And I was showing one of the other developers, and he's like, oh yeah, you just do this, and he swiped, and I was like, whoa, okay, we can do this cool thing now, because the users are already used to it, they've already been using it. And I think we need to add more of that in there. Plus, it also gives, as far as keeping them in control, it gives them a little bit more of a sense that they're doing something or they're accomplishing something, and they have more control over their user interface. That they can discover that one little thing that makes it more fun. Plus, they can tell their friends and whatever. They can say, "Did you know you could do this?"
This is like that post-row action on the edit screen.
Oh, what is it?
In WordPress admin, your post listing. On hover, you get four or five actions, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like that.
And we were talking about this a while ago. I think it was that on WordPress. There was something on WordPress that I didn't know about. And I'd been using WordPress stuff for, a couple of years.
That would be pretty hard to miss that.
Yeah, I think it was something else. I can't remember. My friend pointed out, and I just felt like an idiot. I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't been using that. direct manipulation of content. So more and more, I think this is more reinforced with mobile. There's kind of the whole natural user interface thing happening with mobile and direct manipulation of content. So rather than clicking an edit button to edit a screen, the old school model is okay, you've got your view screen here of all your profile information, and then up at the top you've got your edit up at the top. So you click on edit, and then it takes that same view, just makes everything inputs now. It's the same exact thing. Everything's laid out the same way. It's it's just redundant, and users get tired of that kind of stuff. So direct manipulation of content would be if you're on the profile page and you want to just change your email address, you just go over and you click on your email address, and it turns into an input, and you change it, and you're done. And I think a lot of this, too, is kind of getting rid of the submit button. My friend built a football pick'em site last year, where you go through and you pick all the college football teams and set your spread and everything. And he didn't have he wanted everything to be direct manipulation. I guess this story is going to go against what I'm talking about here. Awesome. But it's a good illustration of users. So he goes through and he makes everything, so every time they went and picked their thing, we just make an AJAX call and store it off and blah, blah, blah. So then you get to the bottom of the list, and at the bottom of the list, there's nothing. There's no submit button. And so about half the users that were using the Pick'em site that he built would send him an email to the support and be like, how do I save? I don't know how to save anything. And at the time, he didn't have a spinner. He didn't have any action. He didn't have any feedback to, show the user that it has been saved. And so he came to me, and he was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, why can't they just get this? Like, he was like the typical frustrated, you know, designer-developer. Like, I don't know why these stupid users can't just figure it out, you know? And I'm like, well, they don't know. Like, they're used to going to Yahoo Sports and clicking down all the radio buttons and hitting save. And so you're just clicking that. I have no idea. If they leave the page, they're totally scared. They're like, I just picked all this stuff, and this is the best lineup ever, and I'm going to win this week. And so I just told them, I'm like, well, just put a spinner on every little thing, and then as they go down, it'll just spin. And he did that, and then it was everybody was cool, everybody's quiet. And then a lot of those users that didn't like it at the beginning really liked it because they didn't have to worry about saving. And a lot of times they could just go in, and they could click on a couple and then leave and then come back, and they felt more secure about it. So there's some issues with direct manipulation of content like that, but there's definitely ways you can fix it. And then give feedback. That's a good thing to talk about. Give feedback. So I still see this where, like, you have an input that doesn't have a highlight when somebody clicks on it. I'm just like, I don't know how this is even possible. Like, doesn't the browser just do this now? But yeah, like, highlights when somebody clicks on something, color changes, like on links or buttons, any kind of even slight change or feedback or like drop shadow or anything on anything, any action that they click on or anything that requires an action is great for users, because then the users know something happened. Like on the spinner thing, like when they were clicking on stuff and they were saving their points, give them that little spinner. Once the spinner stopped, then they knew that it was saved and they were ready to go. Success warnings and errors. If they do something and they succeeded at their task, at their action that they're doing, if they submitted a form on a landing page, tell them they submitted a form and that it was successful. If there's something missing, then warn them that there's something missing. I would refrain from using errors as much as possible, unless there's a real error, unless they really need attention. Most of the time, error is a big red box somewhere, or a big scary red X, or something like that. It scares users a lot of times. So if you can just do it with a yellow, like, triangle with the exclamation point inside of it, it's better.
Whoops. Or just take them to that place with JavaScript and say, here you are. Don't give them an error. Just say, oh yeah, you're in the email form. Hit submit. You're back in your email field. Sorry.
Exactly. Like,
what do you think you should do next? You know,
when I was doing the marketing stuff, we were doing all that shady marketing stuff. We had forms, and they would validate on submit. So we had like multi-stage like forms. So we had them go through like these five jQuery like forms that would just refresh, and then at the end they would hit submit, and then they would get this. They would get a modal pop-up of like a list in red of like exclamation points in red, like, you didn't fill out your name and you didn't fill out all this kind of stuff. And then they had no idea how to get back to it most of the time. It was like we had to just send them back to the original page. And so one thing that we did with that is just did the inline validation as they went. Just boom, boom. And we gave them the little success mark. And then we gave them the warning that said that needed attention. And we didn't force them to, like, you know, we didn't, like, highlight everything red and say, oh, you need to fix this right now. Like, we gave them a chance to kind of breathe and figure out, you know, find their home address or whatever. Their fake email address that they were going to put in the form. The other thing is, too, is, like, give it to them instantly. I hate it when, like, things aren't instant on the web. I think most people do. Like, if you click on a button or you click on an input and something highlights, make sure it highlights now, and you're not, like on some hover states, there's still hover states where they're loading, like, a sprite image and behind it, and you, like, hover over it and nothing happens. And then you start to move, and then it goes boop, and it changes, and you're like, whoa, that was super weird.
Then pre-load images, and
yeah,
or waiting to change a button after the AJAX request has gone through and you've seen it come back.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, you're just waiting. Or spinners that go forever and ever and ever. Just instant feedback is better. Instant gratification for your user is better. And then the other thing, too, is be positive. Even in an error, like, don't say something crazy stupid that's gonna like offend your user. Yeah, just kind of stay away from those. We had some forms that we were designing that had some interesting words in them, and I think the developers honestly thought that nobody was ever gonna read that error. Or they either thought that the error was never going to happen, and it was happening a lot, and we were getting in the forums that, why are you calling me stupid? And it's like, no. Users may be stupid sometimes, but we shouldn't tell them that they're stupid. The other thing on the be positive thing, too, I think, is using the states. So if it's a warning, if it's something you just want that just needs the user attention, be positive and use a warning instead of an error, because an error is something negative, it's something bad, you did something wrong. So use a warning instead. Highlight it yellow. Yellow is a little bit more, it's a little bit less oppressive than red. Be positive, try not to be so wordy. I know that happens a lot with our developers. We still have buttons that have like the longest, like a full sentence in a button. You know, like the button's super long, and you're like, you can just say add. Like, you can just say add. You don't need to say add assignment to this list, like, in a month. You don't need to do it. And then, like, on feedback warnings, we have ones that are just super long. And all you got to do is just say, hey, you know, check this out. Go here and check this out. But give feedback. Make it instant. Be positive. Any action requires a feedback. If the user's going to click on something, hover over something, do something, add something, delete something, it needs some sort of feedback. And then be efficient with your UI. Like I said, this is where we get into the debate a lot at work. You know, clicks. I've debated myself over this a lot of times too. Like, what does efficiency actually mean? Efficiency. Here's the little definition. Accomplishment of or ability to accomplish a job within a minimum expenditure of time and effort. So if it's just that, that's great. Really simple. It's not so simple, though. So we talked about forms earlier. We talked a little about forms and people clicking through forms and stuff like that. There's natural steps to certain forms. You can break up forms more naturally. Like, you can do, like, profile, you know, fill out your profile and then go to your you know, credit card information and then your shipping information. You can make natural steps. I like the accordion forms are more efficient than a form that's going to reload all the time. So like if you're doing like an e-commerce site and they have to purchase stuff, you got to have them put in, like if they're on Amazon, you got to have them put in their profile information, their name. You gotta have them put in their shipping address. You have to have them put in their credit card information, all that kind of stuff. The more natural steps to do that is sort of, you know, I'm gonna do this first, second, third. Like, I'm just gonna do it naturally. But like the accordion style forms are a great way to do that because they can just focus in on one section, and then it slides up. They know what's coming up next. So if they need to like prepare for something, I don't know. They know what's coming up next. They also know where they've been. They can also go back naturally and open that back up and see what they're doing. And that's just much more of an efficient way to handle like a multi-step form. And I think just because like some of the forms we built in the past, you did the little jQuery thing where you're reloading the form and then they couldn't really go back. You know, once they kind of went through there, they couldn't really go back very effectively. So I like those. But just natural steps and kind of all the stuff you do. If they click on something to publish something or to do something, you got to give them a natural way to like unpublish that information. And consistency as well. Like WordPress does a good job. We're modeling our published draft after WordPress at work because we really like the way that WordPress is set up as far as like I can publish it and then when I come back to it to edit it, I can just update it, and I know it's in the same place. It's the same button. I click on the same thing. I don't even need to know what it says. I know that button means that when I click on it, it's going live on the internet. That's all I need to know. And so we really like that publish and that draft mechanism, and the way they do it. It's a really good natural process. Maintain visual hierarchy is a really great way to be efficient, especially for the user and their eyes. Like you have all these competing things going on all the time, And this kind of goes back to the overall goal and the the overall goal of the user and having the one primary action is you want your visual hierarchy to just naturally send the user to where you want them to go. So you don't want a bunch of like crazy. You don't want like if your button is red, like your primary action on your website or whatever is red, like on your form, and then you put some you know photograph in your slideshow of like a bunch of people wearing red shirts, then that instantly competes with now your primary action. So maintaining that visual hierarchy, and I think in theme building and stuff like that, it's going to be really hard to do because. I'm not on Theme Builder. I know you are, Chris, but like you don't know what content's going to go in there, and so a lot of times you don't really have a ton of control over that visual hierarchy. But with shape
back to,
and
it goes back to like the primary button description. You know what I mean? There's a certain amount of control that you can have over some things.
Yeah,
but obviously you're not going to be able to like compete with any feature points.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, like in themes, you have like those landing page themes that have like a big giant like image on the front that goes across, a big slideshow or something. And that kind of, I always thought that was interesting to me because on a landing page, I just want them to just sign up for my form. And so my form needs to be like the biggest thing on that page. And everything else needs to just move to that form. And if you have those big giant pretty like images, then they get lost in those slideshows and those images.
Customers like those. Sorry, the clients like the big, confusing, distracting sliding images.
Yeah, I think the clients like it a lot.
Clients like it. It may be inefficient
Everyone loves
and distracting.
Here's how Omnigraph will make our product work.
Yeah.
I've seen e-commerce sites pull that off in an alright sense because they'll actually use that to advertise their current sales.
Yeah.
And that is what they want to draw the users to.
Yeah, a lot of them too. I've seen a couple of the landing pages that did the full page. Like some of them did these big giant like image sliders, which we always stay away from when I was doing marketing because we just couldn't figure out how to make them work. And then they'll have like a button, you know, that pops up a modal form and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of other different ways, but yeah, just maintain that visual hierarchy. Whether you're using a big image, you know, and you have this little tiny small primary button that's bright green. Like, that still doesn't work. Like, the size difference matters. You know, where you're going to go. You can also guide your user with, like, lines and, you know, the way you line up your blocks.
Yeah.
Arrows always work, especially on landing pages.
A
little bouncy arrow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Those are awesome.
Need to lose weight? Go right here. And then organize. Organize your user interface. Like, lay it out. Organize it. We do a lot of like wireframing at work. Like that's what I spend most of my time doing is wireframing, and then arguing over wireframes all the time, which is weird. But organize your stuff. Organize your layout when you're developing and designing it. Just make sure it's organized. It's more efficient for you to organize, and it's also just that organization is just going to be more relevant to the user who's using it. That it? Yeah, so that's it. That's all I have. Do you guys have any other questions for me?
Is there anything in the WordPress admin that just drives you insane?
Anything in the WordPress admin? You know what? I'm a really big fan of the WordPress admin. I started out using Joomla with CMS
no
stuff.
Wonder.
And,
that was a big step up.
So when I started using WordPress for just a blog, I was like, "Whoa, this is awesome!"
Have you tried out the new
M6?
MP6.
It's that UI
project going on right now that's going to replace.
It's very flat and black.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Like flat stuff. Is it like? I think
it's,
Squarespace has a really flat layout, like admin layout too.
Maybe so. But yeah, so this is their new. It's like their new test for the WordPress admin
stuff.
So, a couple of questions. Have you guys looked, or what's been your experience with
like user testing services, right? That you can say, here's a task, do these six steps, and it'll record the whole thing, stuff like that.
We still kind of do things a little bit old school, like as far as we use Silverback to record our stuff, and that works really well. That's built and designed for usability testing, so it works really great. We use that a little bit. We generally just record, and then we're kind of behind the curtain when we're doing the administration of like the user tests. So we kind of go old school and just like take notes and be like, oh, they, you know, we do more observation, I think, than just like task orientation stuff. But yeah, we use Silverback, and what's the other one? One of our other UX guys uses another program that like tracks clicks and does the heat mapping stuff. I can't remember what that is. Is it Woopra? I think it's Woopra. It like records the user as they use it.
Oh, MP6.
P6. Sounds like a...
I have no idea what that stands for.
They've said it doesn't stand for anything.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've read. It stands for something.
Yeah, I would say. But I haven't figured it out. Yeah,
it's got an awesome plug-in logo.
Oh, that's new. I haven't seen.
My other question is, what's your thoughts on like UX for kind of different level of users, right? Like controls and ability for beginner users who have to sort of have some hints and explore a bit versus advanced features, shortcuts, keyboard shortcuts, all those sorts of things where people who are like, I've used this for 3 years, I just want to get in and get done.
Yeah. I kind of believe just in the fact that you should design for the average user. So you design for your average persona. So like we have written personas at work that I wrote up a while ago. They're just kind of average. Just average run-of-the-mill people. What are the average run-of-the-mill goals of what the application is? And then we do two. We do two other things. We do a couple other things for the new user, like the new student every semester. The new person that's coming to our application. We used to do like a wizard thing. There's like this big footer thing that slid up and gave you like bullet lists of what
to do.
Did
you have a paperclip?
No, but no. We probably should
just
have like a little animated Clippy guy.
I say you should have Clippy.
I bet you could pat him.
Yeah. but we use Zurb has a, what's it called? Test drive? I can't remember. We have a tour thing. It's called Joyride. I think this is pretty cool for new users. So yeah, for new users, it does something like this, where like you change a feature, and then you go in and you build these little things out, and the user goes in and says, "Hey, we just did this over here. Look, now your calendar edit button is on the left instead of the right," and you're like, "Oh, okay, next step," and then it takes you to the next place. And we have in our application, we're going to be doing this a lot more. We just built it where we could take our users on a tour. So whether they be like average users or brand new users, like as soon as they sign up, instead of getting the wizard of like build a course by doing this and then like highlighting the button up here and having the wizard clear down here, we don't know where that is on their screen because maybe their screen's small so that button's gone. We're doing more of this kind of stuff, and it's working pretty well. And then for like the power users, we always do the stuff like keyboard shortcuts. We add in those kind of things that they can either edit or just use to do certain things. But I generally like to design for the average, like the average just regular run-of-the-mill user, because then I know we're accomplishing the overall goal of every user to do that, and then we can add certain things for the power user to kind of speed them up, and then we add like tours or keep things simple for you know, regular users. But yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I'm just curious. I mean, so it sounds like you do include some of those capabilities for each end of the spectrum.
Yeah. I think, too, one thing that's really big, and it's really simple to do, is empty state design. So if you have like a to-do application, and somebody signs up for your to-do application and they have nothing in there, they have no to-dos, they have nothing to do, and they want to go in and add something to do, that empty state, that empty place visually where there's nothing, is just daunting. It's just like it's the worst thing for a new person. They come in, there's nothing there. You know, it's like, oh crap, what do I do? And having just an empty state thing there, even if it's just like a little icon that says, you know, welcome to my to-do application, and there's a little list, and maybe a link, hey, you know, do your first to-do right here, and click on it. And that gets them into it, that gets them into the process, that, you know, that, and it doesn't take, that doesn't take away from a power user at all. The power user just can completely ignore that, because it's, you know, once they start getting stuff in, it's gone. They don't have to worry about it. And so there are little design tricks like that that you can do that can help out for the first-time user, as well as the power user, and not get in the way, you know, not like, you know, harm them. Like that wizard that we have currently is the worst, because we have power users every semester. We have teachers that have used Canvas a lot. They come in, and as soon as they come into the new course, their new semester, all their new courses are brand new in our system, right? They're all brand new. They're gonna come in, and they're gonna import their old courses from last semester. They're gonna move them over, and they get that gigantic Flutter wizard every time. And they don't have any use for it at this, you know, at that point. They've done it. So that's one of the things. This kind of tour aspect that we're trying out too, they won't be able to, like, they can just exit and they're done on the first thing, and so it's not a big deal. Yeah, anything else? Questions? Concerns? Explanations?
I thought that was